carnivore diet is a dietary approach that involves, you know, eating exclusively or almost exclusively animal-based foods. So this means you're consuming meat.
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture. Adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real-life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to another episode of My Diet Experience, where I'm going through a lot of the most popular diets that I decided to better understand them. I had to go through them. So over the last several years, actually more than that now, time is just flying. I always will take a popular foundational diet. So I don't necessarily go for kind of the kitschy, like some random dietitian wrote this one specific eating style that's just yams and vegetable juice and stuff like that. Like, I don't follow those because I usually have, through my education and experience and then watching my clients go through some of those things on their own or before they work with me, I usually will deduce that those are definitely more along the lines of kind of boutique crash diets that might give you some sort of result in the short term, but it's not because of the diet itself. It's usually because you're just becoming more intentional about the food you eat. However, the diets that I did experience, so, you know, last episode on 102 was about intermittent fasting, which is frankly more an eating style. It's not a diet itself, but it is still one of those really popular foundational eating methods that, you know, a ton of people have capitalized on and promote or don't promote, you know. So that episode is really great for those of you who want to know how me, as you know, when I did intermittent fasting a few times, I did it when I was 24 and then I did it again when I was 27. And then I kind of implement some of the parameters around eating now and again, when I can kind of sense that like my hypoglycemia might be kind of kicking in or anything like that. Like if I'm experiencing a lot of blood sugar spikes and drops that are giving me those kind of low blood sugar experiences again, which fortunately, you know, ever since really following intermittent fasting more strictly for only like 3 months, it kind of really helped rebalance those blood sugar issues. So if you want to learn more about that, definitely check out episode 102. But for today's episode, you know, I'm going to be talking about the carnivore diet and some of the other diets that I have tried that future episodes are going to be on in this series are the vegan diet and paleo. Stay tuned for all of those if you're really curious about that. And obviously the carnivore diet is literally a 180 from the vegan diet. So it should be fun for you guys to hear my personal take and experience going through those. So I am going to kind of share, you know, carnivore diet actually is the most recent one that I immersed myself in. I followed this diet for, I think like 10 weeks, and I would say 8 weeks more strictly. And I'm going to dive into a little bit more of the nuances, like the variations of carnivore diet that people have done or that people generally recognize. You know, a lot of people are purists. They really, the one way of carnivore is a certain way, then I'll map it all out for you. But it was definitely one of those things where I attempted kind of the initial hardcore version and then adjusted it because I am just a shameless intuitive eater and mover. You know, that's the base of my business and how I coach people. And so for myself, it was impossible for me to ignore those foundational things that I follow and that I recommend. So I definitely didn't stick to the like purest carnivore diet, but it still was a variation that counts as a carnivore diet. So I hope that you guys enjoy this conversation. And if you have any of your own experiences or questions about it, I'd love for you to reach out to me. You can always come and follow our community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast or at Kaylee Loren. You can go to the show notes for those links at the bottom of the show notes. And there's a lot of other great stuff and resources for you guys there as well, including a 2025 journal prompt little freebie downloadable that you will love if you actually take the time to do it. So I highly recommend that you go and download that little four awesome question journal so that you can, you know, write this year ahead of time, you know, plan ahead, reflect. If you don't do any of that stuff, it is really hard to actually make progress, you know, whatever that looks like for you. But I know for me, ever since probably like 2015, when I first started journaling more consistently, if I don't take the time to think about what I want for my life and do a little manifesting and a little reflection and a little radical honesty with myself, I really don't do a whole lot that aligns with me that next year. And when I reflect back on the last several years, I'm like, I literally didn't touch my journal that year, or like I did, but it was only like when I'm processing things throughout the year. It wasn't any sort of mapping of the year or any of that. And so even if you're listening to this episode and it's not the beginning of 2025, you should still do these prompts. It's very aligning with getting yourself recentered and making sure that you know what you want and start to make the decisions that will take you there, you know? So I really hope that you guys like that freebie, but there's a whole ton of other amazing freebies I've made for you guys on there. So you can just check out the show notes again and it'll take you to my Stand store. And that's where you can quick download all those things. And yes, it does ask for your email, but I don't spam, I promise. So I'm not like one of those people who send like a friggin' marketing email every 2 days. That's exhausting. And I know that that's probably why a lot of people are so like, I don't want to do that. You know, it's like I send a one time a month wellness newsletter. And then there might be an occasional once every 3 months extra thing of like something I think that you might actually be interested in. So that is my promise. Okay, so let's dive into my diet experience with the carnivore diet. Okay, so this episode, I'm kind of giving you pretty much all you need to know about this diet, but there are definitely a ton more in-depth episodes on carnivore diet from other people who follow it hardcore or who promote it, you know, all that kind of stuff. But this episode, I'm more so going to kind of give you the nitty-gritty of like, what is the carnivore diet? What are the variations that people tend to follow? But I'm mostly going to be focusing today on like my personal experience with it as a premenopausal 30-something. And so hopefully you guys understand that like this isn't going to be the all-encompassing, you know, none of these episodes are actually going to be the all-encompassing diet deep dive, okay? So they are definitely more experiential, but that is what I have continued to get a lot of questions about over the years, so that's why I'm making the series. So the carnivore diet is a dietary approach that involves, you know, eating exclusively or almost exclusively animal-based foods. So this means you're consuming meat, fish, eggs, animal-derived products, kind of like butter, some dairy, and it's excluding plant-based foods such as fruits, vegetables, grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, etc., processed sugar, processed foods. All of that is off the table. So the core principles of the carnivore diet is that you're using animal-based foods only. So you're focusing on the nutrient-dense foods like red meat, poultry, fish, eggs, and organ meats, and it is best executed by paying for quality, sustainably raised animal products. That's always where you're going to get the best nutrients. A lot of the animal-based foods that have gotten a lot of flack are because they have come from this super mass-produced factory farm version of raising and using animals for nutrients. there are plenty of farms and farmers who prioritize animal-forward sustainable farming. And so they're always going to be giving you a better product when you purchase from those. So if you're somebody who's considering the carnivore diet, you are going to have to kind of budget and orient towards higher quality, ideally local farmers and farms to be where you're getting it sourced, or at least order from those delivery farms that will freeze all the meat and send it to you for a more budget-friendly version. Because I will say early on, one of the things that was definitely unexpected about this diet is that when you are prioritizing higher quality, you know, grass-fed, maybe grass-finished, sustainable meats and or fish, you know, sustainably caught fish, it is a pretty penny. It was definitely more expensive to some extent than I expected. However, you don't eat as much, I will say, as much volume, I suppose. But the other core principles of the carnivore diet is that you're doing zero to minimal carbohydrates. So pretty much all plant-based or artificial carbohydrates, or processed rather, not artificial. Some of the things are artificial. And that you're having a high fat intake. So you're typically getting those fats from animal sources, because those are the primary energy source that you will be utilizing. It's not just the protein. Fat and carbs are energy sources. Go back to my macros episodes if you don't understand carbs, fats, and proteins, because they will rock your world. They are still some of our most popular episodes. That would be episode 19 through 22, I believe. Okay, so let me talk about a little bit of the benefits of the carnivore diet. I will kind of say like allegedly, because with any diet, a lot of these benefits are very individual. Like they're related to you as an individual, your genetic makeup, your lifestyle, what foods you choose. You know, if somebody were to be doing the carnivore diet and strictly buying the cheapest meat possible, aka factory farm-raised animals, they probably are going to be getting a lot of chemicals that were never meant to be consumed, because the animals are kind of pumped with a lot of these antibiotics and other things. So you may not actually be getting those health benefits if you are choosing the lowest quality meats and the cheapest meats. You know, so I wouldn't recommend following a carnivore diet if that is where you err towards when you're choosing the meats that you purchase. And I know that, you know, it kind of can become a little bit exclusive in the sense that, you know, you don't have as much access, or somebody might need to have a more robust budget financially to do the carnivore diet as close to the natural way as possible. But the same can be said for like a vegan diet, because if you're buying the cheapest vegetables and plant-based products possible, you're going to be getting a lot of pesticides, other contaminants from the soil, and the low quality, highly processed vegan products that are on the market. So I definitely recommend that you consider paying attention to, if you're going to follow a diet like that, where you're sourcing those things, right? So some of the benefits that a lot of people touted and what kind of, you know, enticed me to explore this diet was the reduction of inflammation. So it's kind of suggested that cutting out plant-based foods eliminates certain compounds like lectins and oxalates that a lot of individuals, sometimes some individuals, it kind of depends, contribute to inflammation. So, I mean, it's like the whole conversation of seed oils, and, you know, there are actually a lot of vegetables that are fruits even actually, because tomatoes are technically fruits, that a lot of people's bodies don't like the phytocompounds that they produce, and it actually does cause issues for them. It can actually even encourage thyroid issues. And so, you know, a lot of these things like nightshades and stuff in those categories can be really problematic for somebody who may not even know that they're trending towards hypothyroid, or if they have an autoimmune condition. So plants actually can be harmful for people who don't monitor their thyroid and their full thyroid, not just TSH. We're looking for T3, T4, TPO antibodies, and all that good stuff. If that just sounded foreign to you, I would definitely look into some people like Merrick Health or Kyle Gillett. Those people have some great resources online where you can order more in-depth labs. And I'm also working on being able to offer those resources for you guys as well. So kind of just keep an eye on the show notes, and I will be able to start offering some of that access for you guys, which is really exciting. It's a huge part of exactly why I'm doing my master's in clinical nutrition. But with all that said, it is really important for you to know your body and your situation before you start a diet that is more restrictive. So it, you know, a lot of the times we will see these diets, any of the diets that I've tried, as nutritional interventions. So sometimes people, like you'll hear for a lot of people when they're recovering from cancer, they might try any of these different diets because they're more restrictive and they have these alleged benefits for certain genetics and certain circumstances where they can immediately put you into a state that is more healing. So that is definitely something that I have seen across the board. I've seen people heal things with carnivore. I've seen people heal things with plant-based. And so that and keto, you know, as well. And so the difference between keto and carnivore, by the way, is keto is a very high fat and a moderate protein and a low to no carb. Carnivore is a very high protein, very high fat, and low to no carbohydrate. So it's kind of important to differentiate those because some people get those a little bit confused. Okay, so the other benefits that you will commonly see with the carnivore diet is weight loss, of course, because you're focusing on high protein and satiating foods with some really natural fats that digest slower. So a lot of people tend to lose weight because of the overall caloric intake being lower and having an improved metabolism based off of having, you know, protein is a metabolically expensive. We call it metabolically expensive because it takes a lot of metabolism work to break down all those amino acids to be used. So protein is always more satiating long term because of that. So that's why, you know, even for a mixed plate diet, which is what I do usually follow and I teach to my clients and we learn, is because you always want to have high protein because for all of those different reasons, especially if you're somebody who wants to have lean muscle mass and maintain lean muscle mass. So we like that component of this diet for sure. And so you also will see some people have gut health improvement. You know, a lot of people, I'll talk a little bit more about some of the personal stuff and the different things I heard from people over the year prior to trying this, because carnivore has become very popular. It's kind of like the new keto. A lot of people are all into carnivore the last couple of years, even though frankly, like this is another diet that's been around for centuries because some people only had access to meat and animals, you know, for the most part of their year. And so this isn't something that's new to human physiology, but for the social society kind of component, yeah, it is on the newer or popular side right now. But the gut health improvement, you know, a lot of people have seen gastrointestinal issues like bloating, gas, IBS, and even autoimmune conditions. And I say that in relation to gut because actually we are finding a lot more autoimmune conditions are tied to gut health. So a lot of those symptoms subside or heal from removing some of the irritating fibers and irritating components, phytocompounds from plants. And this is a real thing. This is a thing that can really burden people's bodies and they may not realize it because sometimes, you know, all or nothing of any type of specific enzyme or plant chemical can, you know, over time really affect the body because why plants produce them is so that they can protect themselves in the wild. So if you've ever touched a tomato plant, you know, if you've ever touched the little green part on the top of the tomato, or if you've had like a plant itself and you touch any of the stems, have you ever smelt that strong chemical on your fingers? It's not a bad scent, but it's strong and it's immediate. Like you can barely touch any of that tomato plant and it'll get all over your fingers. And that's why a lot of nightshades are actually pretty harmful to a lot of people, especially if they have like hypothyroid and things like I was saying, because those chemicals can actually attack the thyroid when they get into the digestive system and a whole lot of different stuff. It's not quite as straightforward as that, but that's just the layman's terms because we're not going to get too much into the science right now. I will actually do some more episodes on thyroid health, maybe get a good guest on the show to talk about that because I think we really need to understand thyroid health a lot more, especially for us females. But carnivore diet has been touted to benefit gut health because of that. And a lot of people, you know, usually say like, okay, well, you don't eat fiber. So how is that good for your gut health? Well, it's kind of unique and we'll probably talk about that a little bit more, but you actually can incorporate some plants and probiotics that come from other foods or fermented foods that can still make their way into an adjusted carnivore diet. So, but it is actually very interesting that the human body does not actually need plants all the time. But I'm not going to say plants at all. I will definitely not say that, especially from what I experience or what I've learned. But, you know, as an intervention, which means short term and for a specific reason and monitored, you know, some people could go a whole year or several years if they're dealing with a specific condition to actually repair their gut and repair their body, you know, put autoimmune into remission, etc. So a couple of the other things that people really like is skin health. They claim that carnivore diet helps with conditions like eczema or acne, you know, which makes a lot of sense because if you're reducing the systemic inflammation and you are healing your gut in that way, stopping whatever is making your gut inflamed and allowing things to make their way through the tight junctions in your intestinal tract that basically get into your bloodstream and wreak havoc, you know, you're going to get a lot of eczema or acne showing up from irritated gut, especially when it comes to, you know, kind of being unchecked with what foods you eat. It's kind of similar, honestly, to the way that people tout certain things for vegan. But for a carnivore diet, you also do get the skin health benefits, especially when you're eating more healthy fats, because healthy fats also are one of our most natural ways to moisturize our skin. So, and then mental clarity and energy, similar to, you know, keto diet. I would say keto clarity is definitely a more specific thing that I would say I see. Oh, that's the one I didn't tell you guys in the beginning. Keto. That is the other experience I'm going to be talking about. But, you know, some people do get those mental clarity and energy benefits from carnivore. I would say personally, from my experience, I see that a lot more with males. I mean, they have 10 times the amount of testosterone that we do as females, usually, in a healthy male. But, you know, we do have different reactions to eating styles as well because of that. Also because we are cyclical and we, you know, especially if we're naturally cycling without birth control or anything like that, you will experience ebbs and flows of your energy and a variety of, you know, mental clarity and all that kind of stuff shifts around when you are naturally cycling. So that's something that males don't experience. And so they don't have that same issue. And so frequently, they usually do get more of the mental clarity than the females. So that is kind of the biggest thing. Those are the biggest components to the carnivore diet that usually make people interested in trying it, as well as like just really letting your body go through a phase where you are just focusing on really natural bioavailable nutrients. And animal proteins are the most nutrient dense foods on the planet. They are the, like, as far as how much the human body can break down and digest and assimilate and utilize nutrients, animal proteins are always going to be king. I don't care what people say online. Every single super intelligent person who has gone through nutrition schooling understands how the body utilizes bioavailable animal proteins compared to plant proteins and plant-based nutrients in general. We just simply digest them and use them better. And so that is where, you know, a lot of people like this diet because you're kind of giving yourself a bunch of nature's vitamins all day long versus some people who typically eat a very low protein diet with high carbs and high fats. That's the standard American diet. You see that all the time. And so when people have to focus into better quality foods, but like keeping it to just animal-based sources, you're getting a lot of nutrients and you're getting satiated all day. So, you know, some of the potential mechanisms of how carnivore diet benefits everybody with those, the different benefits I just listed are, you know, you do go into ketosis, or you can, you know, it depends on if you're somebody who genetically can get into ketosis quickly or not, you know. And the elimination of the anti-nutrients. So anti-nutrients would be compounds from plants that are called lectins, phytates, oxalates, and a variety of other plant compounds that can interfere with nutrient absorption and or trigger inflammation, again, depending on your genetics and your lifestyle. And this diet, you know, removes them entirely. So that is kind of one of those potential mechanisms of how it helps the body reduce inflammation, reduce overall body weight, and improve your skin and your brain and all that, you know, all that good stuff, supposedly. And simplified digestion by, you know, removing the fiber and the plant compounds I just told you about, because it can cause digestive stress for some individuals who do not digest those well. And, you know, that is another important thing for you guys to understand is that, you know, not everything is easily digestible, just because we think like, oh, fiber helps you digest. Yeah, well, a lot of fiber actually helps you have bowel movements because it is indigestible. That would be called insoluble fiber. So there's two different types of fiber, soluble fiber and insoluble fiber. And most of the fiber that we take to get bowel movements is insoluble fiber. So it's more of a prebiotic for your gut bacteria, which is positive, feeds the gut bacteria. But it's negative in the sense that it frankly can't get absorbed or broken down, so it just passes its way through your digestive tract and helps, you know, kind of scrape out your colon, quote unquote. But it is because it is not digestible. So brown rice, sometimes brown rice comes out the way it went in because the husk on the outside is insoluble fiber, so you can't actually break down that rice and utilize those carbohydrates, the starches, because that fibrous external sheath is blocking your body's ability to break it down. And so that's why you'll usually see brown rice kind of come out the way it went in, like I was just saying, and similar to corn, you know, because the outer part of the corn kernel is insoluble fiber. And that's why you'll usually see corn fiber involved in a lot of protein bars, and the high fiber protein bars will often be insoluble corn fiber because it is one of those things that allows them to be able to put how high fiber it is. And insoluble fiber is one of those carbs that if you're following keto or something, you subtract the fiber from the total carbs and then you get the net carbs, right? So that is one of those common things, and that's why. But that is also why it's important for some people to actually remove that from their diet altogether, because it can be problematic and disruptive to their individual body. Okay, so let's talk about some of the criticisms though. So like I was saying, there's a lot of stuff that I had been hearing from different clients or people who were starting to see like targeted things of, you know, there are people that are like nutrition leaders or thought leaders in the, you know, wellness space following carnivore and touting all these different benefits and having all these different experiences. And so they'd forward it to me and be like, well, can't this cause this, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to be completely honest. I was extremely, extremely skeptical when I first heard about it, because I'm like, any restrictive diet in general that limits you to just one food group is not my favorite. I will say the carnivore diet limits you to two, if we're thinking carbs, fats, and proteins, it limits you to two sources of foundational macronutrients, but not in a way where it's going to be detrimental if you were to like stick to that for a while, again, because I know how nutrient dense a lot of these sources of food or of nutrients are. That sounds funny. Nutrient dense, nutrients, micronutrients. So your vitamins and minerals and all that good stuff. A lot of coenzymes for things like collagen and all that junk. Important junk. Micronutrients, just because they sound like they're smaller because they're not macronutrients, does not mean they're not important. They are essential, very essential nutrients. So a lot of people are concerned that, you know, you're not getting fiber and you're not getting certain vitamins like vitamin C that you just can't get out of animal foods. Yes, that is a very true thing. And that is why it is important to explore the variations of the carnivore diet, and why I don't know if I could honestly say the hardcore carnivore diet is good for you. And after this little section, I'm going to tell you exactly those different types of diets and what food items kind of land in those categories, so you can kind of get a better picture of the different versions. And then I'm going to tell you which one I did do. So long-term health risks, you know, a lot of people are concerned about like heart disease because it's red meat, which, guys, if you have not been paying attention, they actually did just finally publish a gigantic meta study that it is not true. Red meat does not cause heart disease. Not true at all. Low quality processed red meat, yes. And that has been where it has always landed, you know, even through when I was in my bachelor's degree and we had to do all these different research things on common, you know, nutrition public phrases, you know, I can't remember how my teacher posed it, but we had to pick something that was just a commonly known nutrition myth and look into it. And even then, though, there was still a ton of research that just, if you are somebody who knows how to read academic research, clinical trials, all that kind of stuff, you would see that they never differentiated or asked the people where they got their meat, what kind of meat they had. And so, of course, taking any natural food product and processing it into an unnatural form of it, like a highly processed sausage, where it's a bunch of ground meat that's all the little trimmings that nobody eats and sausaging it together with nitrates. Yes, that can absolutely cause colon cancer and cause heart disease because it's a kind of bastardized form of meat. Real like pasture-raised cows, like a steak from that guy, super healthy, super important for especially females who are naturally cycling because it's the only source of hemiiron, which is a really important bioavailable iron that only comes from animal proteins. So that's one of those areas where we have to kind of separate a lot of these myths and find out, you know, how can you optimize the quality of the food? And I remember like one little thing I will say, one of the best things I learned the concept of when I started into the fitness world was I met this director at the gym I worked at, and she sent me, because she was just like talking about all this different nutrition stuff because she had just read this book and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know how you get jazzed on something when you read a book. And she was saying that she's like, I'm going to forward you this ebook, blah, blah, blah. Well, it was like the electronic version of the book. It wasn't a short little ebook. It was like the full book. But she was like, essentially, all you have to think about is if a food source, how close it is to its natural form is going to be the best form for you. Anything that's furthest from its natural form is probably not going to be very good for you. And I was like, that's literally the most basic concept that's absolutely logical and it makes a lot of sense. But I would say the caveat, now being a nutritionist and all of that, is that some raw products, I would probably not include them in that category because, I mean, a lot of, you know, raw food vegans have, you know, moved away from that because they are finding that raw plants, you know, again, all of those different plant chemicals do cause digestional distress and a lot of different issues for most human bodies if you are eating a strictly raw diet. So that's not really recommended, but the most natural form of something, and then if you just roast it in the oven or saute it in a pan on the stove, you know, you're going to have much better nutrients and it's going to be considered a whole food diet versus a packaged or canned or, you know, mixed into a microwavable. Any of those things are going to not be as great for you. So hopefully that kind of sticks with you after listening to this episode because it is kind of the easiest way to look at something and be like, is this going to be health promotive and nutrient dense? You know, probably not if they have to process it a ton. Just like skim milk, 2% milk, low quality milk, try moving towards A2 whole milk if you can. Even better would be organic A2 whole milk or seasonal fat, which means just naturally how much fat is in it. It's usually 4-6% because those are very nutrient dense sources of food and they actually are not bad for you. And one glass of milk is not going to make you fat. It's such a bad thing from like the 80s and 90s when I think it was even the 70s when they started making low fat dairy everything and it just completely bastardized milk and made it so low quality because of just highly removing and putting things back and just all that junk is not good for you. So if you're somebody who doesn't digest dairy at all, then, you know, obviously don't have that dairy. But if you're somebody like me who's lactose intolerant, and frankly, I only have lactose intolerance because I just don't make the lactase enzyme, the A2 milk, which is cows that have been bred to not have as much casein. And a lot of times these companies will actually just add in lactase to their milk. You know, that's like the Fairlife milk that you'll find in the stores here in the US. Those will digest better. And you do want all of your milk sources to have a really nice balanced carbs, fats, and proteins. That's why it's a complete food, actually. Milk is actually a powerhouse in that way. It has solid amount of healthy fats, solid amount of healthy proteins, and solid amount of healthy carbs because of galactose, the milk sugar that is in there. However, for those of us who are like me who don't digest dairy very well because of the lactase and therefore also the galactose and all that, we need those extra enzymes to digest it, or we just need to keep that very minimal in our diet. You don't have to remove it entirely. But if you're somebody who gets horrible reactions to dairy of any sort, even if you try the A2 and you take a lactose, you may want to never have dairy or get checked out because, you know, there's different digestive issues like SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, that can cause those nutrients that are in like dairy to overreact and give you like stabbing stomach pains and all that kind of stuff. So I definitely would, you know, pay attention to some of your symptoms with what foods you eat. That's like the first thing I'll always ask my clients when they have episodes of any sort of symptoms of like acute but not so good symptoms like stomach ache, headache, bloating, gas, diarrhea, all of those different things. I will usually first ask them, do you remember what you ate today or yesterday? And then observe what they ate. And then if they try it again and they have a similar reaction, okay, then it's obviously most likely that food or something like that, you know, or what did they do in the day? You know, that's a really easy way for you. And that's why I'm telling you guys this, is that you can take inventory for yourself on your reactions to different foods or situations and better empower yourself, because then you'll learn, okay, this doesn't work for me. Okay, this does work for me. Or, you know, if you can't figure it out, that's where you would hire somebody like me who can help you navigate that stuff. But it's really important for you to pay attention to those things, because a lot of people just go through health or their life with like IBS symptoms their entire life, and they keep eating those things that that interfere with their gut. And it's one of those times where, you know, you kind of have to like slap yourself with a little reality and be like, you know what? Yeah, I should probably stop eating this, because I really do hate the digestive discomfort and diarrhea that is always coming after I eat biscuits and gravy and fried chicken, you know. That actually comes from an experience that I had with somebody I know, where it's okay. You know, we all have learning experiences, but it is really important, you know, because I've even gone through that many times with certain things that I was eating, especially at a young age. I had to learn how to become more intuitive with the food I ate, and selective rather, not just intuitive. Okay, so let's talk about the different styles of carnivore diet, and I'll tell you which one I did. So there's, you know, probably at a low level of a lot of different variations of carnivore diet, but I actually like seeing it from the four different type perspective, because that is what I have found to be mostly what people follow. So we're going to start from the most strict carnivore all the way down to the like furthest from strict carnivore. That the last one, number four, may not actually even be really considered a carnivore diet. So, okay, so strict carnivore is, you know, especially for people who have severe adverse effects to plant foods, so that you can do kind of more of the interventional nutritional approach to using this diet for like almost like a medicinal situation. So that looks like 100% animal foods, no exceptions. So you're having meat, organs, salt, and water. And a lot of people refer to that as the lion diet. So that is all you eat. And that is all you get. And that is all, folks. So you should probably, you know, if you're a female listening to this and you are a premenstrual, like you are not, or premenopausal, sorry, not just premenstrual. If you're a premenopausal female, I would maybe not recommend this variation. Okay, it's a little too harsh, or a lot of too harsh, but you know, it could be something that could be an intervention depending on what your practitioner or your professional health and wellness practitioner wants you to do, or you know, you agree to try, etc. So the next one is classic carnivore. So this is for people who have adverse effects to plant foods or just issues with their energy levels and, you know, want to optimize some of those things, possibly want to lose excess fat, etc. So this is 98% animal foods. So you're seeing animal meats, organs, eggs, and dairy. And some people, you know, will use spices, coffee, and tea. So this is kind of your most classic carnivore diet. So most people who follow the carnivore diet are following this way because there's a little more variety and options. You know, it's really nice to include dairy because you get cheese, you get yogurts, you get cottage cheese, you get all the things, which is, you know, a lot of variety for some people because, you know, just meat and organs with water is so boring, especially if you can't use spices and stuff. Like, what? Okay, so animal-based carnivore is number three. This is for people who want optimum health, they want more weight loss, and they have some adverse effects to plant foods. So it's 85% animal foods. So you're getting animal meats, organs, eggs, dairy, fruit, honey, coffee, and tea. So this is sometimes called the relaxed carnivore diet, or we call it, you know, like I said, animal-based carnivore. This is the version that I followed because I need my fruit. I couldn't have no fruit. It just was necessary. You know, I like honey, but I don't put it on a lot of stuff. So for me, it wasn't something that I utilized a ton, but it was really nice to have that option as far as like needing some sweetener or something like that, especially around my cycle. More on that in a second. But this animal-based carnivore would probably be like the second most common version a lot of people follow because, you know, a lot of people like to have that variety that involves the vitamin C and the fiber and those nutrients from fruit. So that is a really popular alternative. And then that also kind of really removes the criticism of the carnivore diet, where people say you don't get fiber, you don't get vitamin C, because with fruit, you get fiber and you get vitamin C. So that is a really good solution and an option for, you know, following animal based, but you're not, you know, 100% animal food only. Okay, number four, the one that's not really a carnivore diet, but some people follow it as if it were more carnivore, because it's honestly kind of, if you thought of a scale with like keto on one side and carnivore on the other side, this diet is called keto carnivore, where people land kind of in the middle. Because true keto, you don't really exceed 20% of your daily food in grams of protein. So you actually still have to be moderate on your protein, because your body will start to go through gluconeogenesis, making sugars as they break down animal proteins as well, you know, or it can hold you out of ketosis. That's one of those kind of tricky things that a lot of people get into when it comes to like keto carnivore, because you're eating animal meats, vegetables, dairy, animal fat, plant fat, nuts and seeds, herbs and spices, coffee and tea. So this is a good option for people when they're kind of transitioning into carnivore diet for the first 3 to 4 weeks, because I mean, like any intensive removal diet, it is really harsh on the body to immediately cut out a bunch of stuff. So some people just will follow keto or a low carb diet as they phase into a carnivore diet or as they phase into a keto diet. So this is one of those options, but you know, you do remove the nuts and seeds and the vegetables once you shift into the next tier, which would be more animal-based carnivore. So a lot of people follow that variation, but it's honestly kind of an augmented diet. It can only almost be seen as like paleo, aside from the fact that you have nuts and seeds and dairy. You know, it's kind of, again, just a different version where people want to incorporate some of those other things, but it definitely is more keto because of that as well. But you do get a little bit more fiber and you have more variety when it comes to having vegetables, nuts and seeds in the mix. Okay. So again, I did the animal-based carnivore. So it was 85% animal foods. I just kept fruit for sure in my diet. I definitely had coffee and tea still. And, you know, I did very good when it came to keeping processed carbs and other starches out of my diet, because, you know, it was very important for me to make sure that I got everything out of trying it. And it's one of those things where sometimes following diets like this are kind of fun because you're facing a challenge, right? You have something new and it's something you've never done before. And I did like the idea of how it's been touted for helping women's hormones and, you know, all of the different gut benefits and neuroinflammation benefits that they tout. And so for me, you know, going into it, that was a huge reason, because as a lot of you guys probably remember, especially from my like soft girl season discussion early last year, it was more towards the end of 2023, but the beginning of 2024, I finally started to do what I always recommend my clients and check in on my hormones and nutrient levels, because I could feel something was wrong. So I had pretty low energy. I was getting migraines around my cycle or coming out of my cycle. I had, you know, some irritability. I had some depressive moments, unusual depressive moments, and like actual depressive moments. So it gave me a lot of perspective into, you know, what people who struggle with like chronic depression. And also I had, you know, low libido. And the weirder one was like after my cycle, like anything could make me just cry. And I'm not like an easy crier, not in a way where I'm like, I'm too tough to cry, but it's more just that like I cry empathetically when like something is in a situation that warrants that energy for me. And so when it was like anything could make me cry, like even like something that just slightly would invoke an emotion, I was like, this is not normal. What is this? So as usual, I went into researching and all that kind of stuff. I got tested, but some functional tests. This was not through my PCP. That is not who I went to for this, because I just knew from years of working with my female clients and trying to get help, being like, hey, let's go, you know, try your insurance first. Let's go through your PCP. And PCPs are useless when it comes to hormonal symptoms for females, guys. Like, I recently made a post about how you need a care team for your healthcare journey. And that does not mean you only go to your PCP and have whoever they refer you to at the generic conventional medicine model. Unfortunately, you know, that can be important for certain things, especially for somebody who suffers with like I don't want to say like serious symptoms, like really harsh, hardcore symptoms, because all symptoms are serious. It's just they all are talking to you at a different level, because like I'm not going to say lethargy isn't as serious as stabbing stomach pains. You know what I mean? So that's what I mean by like the severity of how it's impacting your quality of life can play a role. But you should, I mean, you should always check most things through your PCP, but don't end there. Do not stop there if they think that like nothing is wrong, or if they just want to slap a medication on you. That's why I didn't even bother, because I knew that, frankly, they were just going to be like, I don't know, you can try this thing or you can try birth control and blah, blah, blah. So luckily, you know, armed with a lot of the experience and the knowledge that I have from working with a lot of clients and working in lockstep with their practitioners and learning from them, I knew to get my hormone levels checked, to get certain blood markers checked, check in on everything. And turns out I was not making a lot of hormones in general. My estrogen was low, my progesterone was low, my testosterone was low. And it made a lot of sense. Like, oh yeah, the other thing that was really screaming at me was my muscles weren't recovering. And that was frustrating for me and problematic, because, you know, I've been strength training almost every month of my life since I was 17. So for me, you know, finally being in a position where like I'm way stronger than how I was lifting at the gym and couldn't even recover from like a 35 pound kettlebell deadlift or something like that. And so that was a huge sign for me that like something was off. And so finding all that out and kind of seeing a variety of my other markers, including my blood glucose being a little higher, like my fasting glucose higher than I really wanted, I was like, okay, let's try this nutritional intervention, because I keep hearing a lot about it and a lot of my clients keep asking me about it. So I'd like to learn more about it and then also kind of just get my own experience. So initially, you know, it was really tough doing the whole no any sort of carb, any sort of vegetable. You know, I have a funny tagline my clients know where I always say, where's your veg? Because like when we start coaching together, I'll usually like have them send like little pictures throughout the day of their meals to kind of help them navigate what they're eating and what, you know, I would recommend that they add in to optimize it, etc. And where's your veg is definitely one of the most common ones, because a lot of us get used to not putting vegetables with every meal. But most of my life, especially through nutrition school and whatnot, I've always prioritized some sort of vegetable in my meals. And honestly, actually, now that I'm talking about this out loud, I realized that it was my grandma who always put a vegetable in our meal. And luckily, my grandfather was a really good cook, so he always made vegetables super yummy with like olive oil and garlic and salt and all that good stuff. But like sometimes she would steam carrots, and I just hated that so much. Steamed carrots are gross. Steamed any vegetable is murder to the vegetable, in my opinion. But so for me, having no vegetables was super weird. You know, it was mentally nice to not think about having a vegetable with every meal, but it also was kind of like unnatural for me. And as time went on, everything started to kind of feel very similar to keto. And I'm definitely going to share more in depth about my keto experience. But with the carnivore diet, I definitely started to feel like kind of that shift into a different energy system. Like I felt super tired and like weak the first like maybe 4 days into the diet. And then my body started to adapt. And that's really common for when you're kind of shifting energy systems and your body's trying to make do with what it's getting instead of what it's always gotten. And so for me, you know, even with keto, my body really prioritizes carbs. Like she loves carbs. Everybody knows Kales is the rice girl. I love rice, plain rice, all day, every day, love rice. And so removing that from my diet was super weird and rough. But for me, you know, as I started to shift through it, it got a little bit easier and then my energy got a little better. But the one thing that never changed the entire time I did carnivore for about 10 weeks was I could not shake general brain fog. Like, I felt dumb. A lot of people will talk about that too when they share their experience, but it usually goes away for them pretty fast. But I think because I genetically am just so predispositioned to carbohydrates, like my best guess from all the research I've done is I just have a really hard time shifting away from carbs as my energy source. And especially as moving into the animal-based carnivore where I had more fruits, my body was like, yes, fructose, like carbs again. And I think that that might have sabotaged it for me being like genetically predisposed to being a carb person. Because when I eat carbs, I get energy. That's a really good way for you to know how well you digest different nutrients. So if you're somebody who eats fats and does fine, I eat fats and I feel really gross and like sluggy. If I eat carbs, if you eat carbs and you get sleepy, that's a sign that you don't process carbs very well, or maybe that you didn't, you know, diversify your meal very well with having enough protein and good fats. But also, if you're somebody who with any time you eat carbs, you don't feel energized, you're probably not a carb person. However, I always feel energized from majority carbs, with the exception of processed carbs. I don't feel energized after donuts, really. Sometimes. Not really, though. But donuts are carbs and fat because they're fried in oil. But anyways, so for me, I think that was the biggest issue for me with the carnivore diet was that I am a carb person. And so my brain never really enjoyed and shifted into like the clarity. Whereas with keto, I definitely got that. So definitely stay tuned for the keto episode because I'm going to talk about that. But with the carnivore, having that much protein and then also incorporating some fruits and berries and whatnot, you know, those were the main fruits I had. I think I had more like apples, berries, some oranges. Those were, I think they were just enough carbs to not allow me to really shift into that clarity zone. I will say too that the where things started to go wrong for me personally was I had my first cycle and it was okay. My second cycle, I had horrible migraines, like the worst migraines, and I just had like a lot of fatigue and I knew something was off. And that's also part of why I started to shift towards the animal-based to incorporate more carbs because I could just kind of intuitively tell, especially through those symptoms, that like my body wasn't loving it. And so then a couple more weeks went on and then I just decided, you know, I kind of understand as much as I can about this, but you know, we were actually like 3 months out from our wedding in Hawaii that year. And I was like, I don't want to like dick around with this diet so much so that it like impairs how I feel and show up for my wedding. So that also was part of why I kind of cut it off faster. But I had a lot of friends doing it at the same time as me, and you know, and they were having very good reactions. But some of them are people who do tend to do better on high fat diets. Whereas like for me, again, I'm a high carb person. So for you, you know, the overall takeaway from some of this with the carnivore diet is I would definitely suggest you consider not doing this type of diet if you are somebody who is more of a carb lover. Like you do get energy from carbs, you err towards carbs, you don't feel good with too much fats, you know, that kind of stuff, because that's going to give you a good kind of perspective on whether or not this diet will be good for you or more harmful. And so when I got my hormones retested, I think I ate normally again for at least 4 weeks before I got my blood work done again. And when I checked in my blood work, my TSH had increased. I think it was like 2.5, something like that. And, you know, my hormones didn't entirely improve. And so that was in a way where I was kind of like, okay, well, I obviously am not the kind of person who is getting the health benefits or the hormonal benefits from the carnivore diet. So it's probably not the diet for me. But it is important to know that, like, I think that removal, again, for me being a carb digester, energy source needer. I actually like stressed my thyroid out doing this carnivore diet. And because I always have a pretty healthy thyroid level for my TSH, it's usually your TSH is your thyroid stimulating hormone. It's your pituitary gland communicating to your thyroid gland. And so when that number is higher, that means that it's yelling at your thyroid a little bit louder, essentially. That's kind of like how I like to give perspective on that. When the TSH is like really low, it means that your thyroid is almost overproductive and it's not asking for communication from your pituitary gland as much. Hopefully that makes sense. The more your TSH is, like the higher the number is, the more your pituitary gland is trying to get your thyroid to be active. So that's why you would have an underactive thyroid, which means you have a hypothyroid situation. The opposite is true, hyperthyroid and overactive thyroid, okay? So for me, with this diet, something I started to learn and experience was that because I am still a very menstruating female, and I am a more carb dominant person, this diet stressed out my thyroid. My thyroid is your metabolism. Your thyroid plays a huge role in so many different things, but especially that. And so for me, I didn't find it worth continuing because I do not want to stress out my thyroid more, right? And, you know, there's probably a lot of other factors because of dealing with a lot of the imbalances with my adrenal health and all that from, you know, years of working way too much, way too hard, disobeying my body, even though I'm simultaneously teaching people how to take care of themselves. But that's what this whole last year has been really primarily focusing on, and the years to come, is to find that happy balance and be able to be healthier from it. So the carnivore diet for me was really great for expanding on understanding different dietary interventions and how the human body is fascinating for how it can, you know, adapt to all of these different eating styles and different removals of different food groups and all that jazz. But for me personally, and I just really wouldn't recommend any female that is still menstruating naturally, if you are also somebody who does err more towards carbohydrates for your energy sources, less on the fat side, I pretty much would not really recommend you follow this diet. If you're somebody who's postmenopausal, maybe even certain circumstances of perimenopausal, or maybe somebody who needs to go through a little fertility optimization and you're working with a practitioner on that, this could be a useful diet for that, okay? But I definitely would say, you know, all of this is not medical advice, as you guys know. This is just advice from what I have experienced, or more of like kind of a collection of my thoughts and my experience. So I hope that you guys learned a little bit from today and that it was helpful for you to kind of think about all the different versions of what you've heard about the carnivore diet and kind of land on your own variation that you kind of understand the best and how you want to implement that into your life or not. But all right, Rebel, that's it for today's episode. Share this episode to your Instagram story to like help us grow, or you can just share it to somebody you know who's thinking about the carnivore diet or, you know, has gone through it, because I'd love to hear also like their experience, especially if they are a female who is still naturally cycling. But as always, celebrate your strength and nourishment, walk with confidence. I'll catch you on another episode next week of Rebel Wellness. What did you think about that episode? If you enjoyed it, I hope that you would come join my community on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast, or my coaching page at Kaylee Loren, or both. I would love to see your name pop up on my new follows list. I might say hello if I catch you. And I would also like to invite you to come check out my website, coachkales.com, if you're interested in seeing any more of the educational learning resources I have created for you. I have a whole ton of amazing free downloads that you can like dip your toe in the water of what working with me looks like. And if you are really vibing with what I have to say and how I teach it, come explore my courses that are available for purchase. They are all do it yourself. In the near future, I plan to have some awesome group coaching that will be all live. So stay tuned for that. And the best way to know when I'm going to launch those is through my monthly wellness newsletter, which is my hand curated, not AI generated, monthly all things health and wellness newsletter that I created to be your new favorite resource for staying up to date with the latest in the health world, self-care resources that I've created, and a bunch of the clean beauty picks that I personally use myself, and a whole lot more, as well as early access and discounts to anything that I create in the future for specifically my newsletter sign up. So if you'd like to sign up, head to coachkales.com and add yourself to my mailing list. Last but not least, I would absolutely love it if you would help our podcast grow by simply sharing a rating or review wherever you stream and are listening to me right now, and share it on your social medias or text it to some friends or family members if this episode resonated and was something that you think could help somebody else, because I really would love to help anybody in your circle if I've been helping you. So I absolutely am so grateful that you're here. And if you listened all the way through, you are a real one. So all right, Rebel, until next episode.